Hello and welcome back to MEC Connect. This is Matthew Yaling with Midwest Employers Casualty, and I'm joined today with Patty Reinecke.
Hello, everyone. So we're happy to be back here today to talk about the medical side of our claims podcast.
The last few episodes, we've had Cam, Sherry, and Dan introduce what a migratory claim was, and today we have Dana Dorsey from MEC's Medical Management Unit join us and talk about sprains and strains. Thank you and welcome, Dana.
Thank you. Thanks for having me. I am Dana Dorsey, and I've been with MEC a little over a year, almost a year and a half now. It's funny how fast the time has flown.
And Dana's background is in?
Field case management.
Field case management, right. We're excited to have Dana with us today, and we're going to delve into the topic of sprains and strains. So, as I mentioned earlier, we had Cam and Sherry talk about migratory claims, and I guess really to start off the conversation, we're talking about sprains and strains and excess claims. Do we really see a sprain or a strain claim in the excess world?
Well, we do see sprains and strains in the excess world. Usually the first report of injuries, notice of loss, would generally list the nature or extent of injury as a sprain or strain. However, by the time the injured worker undergoes a more advanced examination or diagnostic testing, usually after failure to improve, the more serious of a condition can be revealed or the severity of a sprain or strain. And so usually by the time the claim is reported to an excess carrier, the injured worker has undergone a ton of conservative treatment and sometimes multiple surgeries. Sprains and strains are the most common workplace injuries, and they are usually a result of ergonomic risk factors, such as excessive force or repetition, awkward positions and postures, slips, trips, and falls, or individual risk factors such as poor body mechanics and lifting techniques, poor overall health habits such as smoking and obesity, and poor nutrition, fitness, and hydration.
Thank you. So just for a moment, I know sprains and strains are thrown into the same category a lot of time, but can you just kind of walk us through the difference between a sprain and a strain?
Absolutely. A sprain is a stretching or tearing of ligaments that injure the bands of tissue that connect two bones together. The most common location for a sprain is usually the ankle. Sprains also occur in other joints such as the wrist, knees, hips, shoulders, and fingers. There are different degrees of sprains. Grade 1 is slight stretching of a ligament. Grade 2 is a combination of stretching and a little tearing. And grade 3 is a complete tear of a ligament. Some of the signs and symptoms of a sprain are pain, swelling, bruising, instability, and loss of motion. 70% of the general population will have an ankle sprain in their lifetime. A strain is when a muscle is stretched too much and tears. It's often referred to as a pulled muscle. Two most common types of strains are back and hamstring. There are three classes of strains. Mild, the muscle or tendon is slightly stretched or pulled. Moderate, the muscle or tendon is overstretched and slightly torn. And severe, the muscle or tendon is partially or completely ruptured. And some of the signs and symptoms of a strain are pain, muscle spasms, muscle weakness, swelling, inflammation, cramping, and 80% of adults will suffer a back injury throughout their lifetime. Diagnosing a sprain is done by history and usually a physical exam to see if consistent with injury to a joint or checking for swelling, range of motion, joint instability. Ligaments cannot be seen on an x-ray. However, x-rays can be taken to rule out a bone injury or a fracture. A physician will determine when further testing, such as maybe an MRI, is needed to determine the exact extent of the injury. Diagnosing a strain is done by exam to check for swelling and tenderness. The location and intensity of pain can help determine the extent and the nature of the damage. In severe injuries, the physician may be able to see or feel a defect in the area of injury where the muscle or tendon has been completely ruptured. Basically, the treatment for sprains and strains is pretty similar and is also described by using the acronym RICE. The R is for rest, avoiding use of the injured area to allow the area to heal. The I is for ice, to dull the pain and minimize swelling. Ice should be applied for 15 to 20 minutes, 4 to 8 times a day for the first 48 hours. The C is for compression. Compress the area with an elastic wrap or bandage to reduce blood flow and swelling. And the E is for elevation. Elevate the injured limb above the level of the heart to prevent or limit swelling. You can use over-the-counter meds for pain and inflammation, and sometimes immobilization with bracing for protection and PT to assist with regaining strength and mobility can be helpful. There are some grade 2 and grade 3 sprains and severe strains that may require surgical intervention. If a person is unable to apply weight or weight bearing on the injured area, the area is numb, or the injury is reoccurring, they should seek medical care. As far as recovery, it varies per individual. It could take anywhere from 2 weeks to heal a minor sprain up to 12 weeks to heal a severe strain. A strain may last 3 weeks to several months depending on the severity. And if there are other associated injuries to the bones or surgeries required, the healing time and complications will increase. Some of the complications of a sprain and strain include ruptured muscles or cartilage injuries, joint dislocation, pain, and reoccurring swelling. The prognosis for a sprain and strain injuries depend on the severity and the site of the injury. Most strains heal completely without adequate treatment, though there will be a higher risk of re-injuring the same area again. Of course, prevention of sprains and strains is better than treatment. Employers can practice prevention by making sure the employees are properly trained in handling techniques and all the equipment works properly. Employees can contribute to prevention by using proper body mechanics, bending at the knees, and lifting with their legs and not their backs. They should also seek help when lifting heavy loads. Stretching every day to increase flexibility, changing positions frequently, and taking care of their body with exercise and adequate rest. Keeping shoes in good shape and fitting well could also help reduce the risk of sprains and strains.
Yeah, that's a lot of great information. I think when you mentioned the slips, trips, and falls earlier, you know, we do the x-ray, or it's like a big sigh of relief, nothing is broken. But we forget that these tendons and ligaments sometimes take just as long to heal as a bone would if it's fractured. That was a lot of great information on not only how to treat them, but the prevention part as well. Because you're right, what they say, an ounce of prevention is better than a pound of cure.
And I've also heard physicians say sometimes it's better to go ahead and just break the bone because that you know what time span that's going to heal, whereas a sprain or strain, it just depends. You know, you just never know how long it's going to take to recover.
Exactly.
And a lot of times we see the initial diagnosis, as you mentioned in the first report of injury, as a sprain or a strain. And now, you know, it's 3 or 4 years later and it's in the excess world and the diagnosis has morphed into something else. So what are some of those common diagnoses you're seeing from an excess claim perspective that may have started as a sprain or a strain?
Some of the most common diagnoses I have seen in excess claims are failed back or post-laminectomy syndrome and chronic pain syndrome. Injured workers with these diagnoses initially had a diagnosis of low back or cervical strain, but they failed to improve with conservative treatment and continue to experience pain following surgeries. Severe cases of failed back syndrome can prevent the injured worker from returning to work or resuming normal life activities. And treatment for these conditions can get costly and may include long-term opioid use, medications for nerve pain, physical therapy, behavioral rehabilitation, interventional procedures such as steroid injections and nerve blocks, and implantable devices such as spinal cord stimulators and intrathecal pain pumps.
All right, I think that helped kind of paint the picture of how we got from a sprain or a strain, and now we're talking about, you know, spinal cord stimulators. It's quite a gap there.
Very true. I think the something that starts out as a simple slip or trip can easily morph into a more complicated injury, especially when it comes to the treatment and the, you know, how bad the injury was. You went through the different grades of tears in the tendons and ligaments and getting the correct amount of treatment for those. So when you have those kind of claims or see these kind of injuries at work, so what are some of the things that you can do when you see these type of diagnosis to hopefully keep them from morphing into the more severe injuries and the lingering treatments?
Well, the key is early intervention injury management. When sprains and strains are treated appropriately, this can prevent minor injuries from becoming lost time claims. Again, the initial treatment should consist of rest, ice, compression, and elevation. A family practitioner or internist can diagnose a sprain or strain. However, for work-related sprains or strains, I would recommend an occupational medicine physician or a physical medicine rehab physician for evaluation and treatment. These physicians can diagnose and treat work-related injuries much more effectively than most primary care physicians. They also tend to focus on the injured worker's current functional status and early return to work in addition to treatment and recovery from injury. Early return to work can be an aid in recovery, as well as help avoid any financial losses during their recovery. The occupational medicine and the physical medicine and rehab physicians will generally recognize when the injured worker is not progressing as expected, and if and when it may be time to elevate treatment to the next level for a possible evaluation by a surgeon or specialist for that particular body part, such as a foot and ankle orthopedic. If the surgeon or specialist determines that surgery is not indicated or the injured worker remains symptomatic despite conservative treatment or out of work, a second opinion might be beneficial. Having a fresh set of eyes to review the medical records and provide new insight, additional treatment recommendations or options, or state the injured worker has reached a plateau or no additional treatment is indicated, is also a benefit of a second opinion.
So you mentioned a lot of doctors there, from the occupational specialist to PM&R doctor, and then even the orthopedic specialist. Are there other important types of doctors that generally you see treating the injured employee population for these more severe claims?
Yes, neurosurgeons, especially after they've had surgery, orthopedic spine surgeons. Pain management gets involved because usually they're on the opioids and medications for nerve pain.
So we usually like to end each episode and just have you give an example of how you've helped an injured employee or one of our partners recover from an injury, or an example of, you know, what you do in your daily work here at Midwest Employers Casualty to help the injured employees. Do you have an example of that?
One of the most recent events that I remember is an injured worker who was filling his medications at the pharmacy. However, he repeatedly had difficulty obtaining a particular medication timely. So I reached out to MEC's preferred pharmacy benefit manager and explained the situation and confirmed that that particular medication would be available via mail order. I contacted the adjuster and provided her with the information, and she was on board with it. She spoke with the injured worker. He agreed with it, so we got him switched over to MEC's preferred PBM, and now he gets his medication timely. In fact, he gets a 90-day supply, so he doesn't have to go to the pharmacy and he doesn't have to worry about his medicine for 90 days. And all he has to do is call and request that refill 2 weeks in advance, and he'll have it on time. And in addition to that, we also saved money on the claim because the medication was much more cheaper getting it via mail order.
So ease of access and saving a little money for everybody. That's always good.
Sounds like a win-win. You were really able to make a difference in his life.
At MEC Connect, we aim to make a difference in the injured employee's life and in our partnership arrangements. Thank you, Dana, for joining us today. We hope MEC Connect has made a positive difference in your day. Thank you, and stay tuned for additional episodes of MEC Connect.
Thank you, everyone.